Searchlights sweep an evening sky, piercing clouds and illuminating a towering edifice in the form of Searchlight Pictures, with the lights of Hollywood, palm trees, and the hills beyond. Over a nighttime bird's eye view of a city, text appears. London's West End, 1953. The view dips through passing clouds towards a cluster of bright lights. Far below, a rodent scurries along a lofty sign across the street from the Ambassador's Theatre.
Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap. In my opinion, a second-rate murder mystery. Not that I've seen it, you understand? But it's a whodunit. You've seen one, you've seen them all.
A man in uniform parks his motorcycle across the theater.
You know the drill. An interminable prologue in which all the key players are introduced. You get a sense of the world they inhabit, and then the most unlikable character gets bumped off.
There's been a murder.
Cue the entrance of a world-weary detective.
The uniformed man shows an usher a telegram for Petula Spencer.
Talks to witnesses. Takes a couple of wrong turns, and then gathers all the suspects in the drawing room and points the finger at the least likely chump because of the way the guy, I don't know, ties his shoelaces.
Now you've seen our play, you're an accomplice to murder.
Backstage, the usher points out a counterweight overhead. The messenger steps out from under it.
Not to tell a soul outside of this theater who done it.
But what do I know? The Limeys, they just lap it up. The play's a smash hit, not to mention a cash cow. And right there is the milkmaid in chief, Petula Spencer.
Standing in the wings, Petula takes the telegram, which reads, "Decided not to come to party. Have sent cake. Agatha." Tossing the message, she applauds the cast leaving the stage. Startled by a mouse, the messenger backs into the usher, who finds himself under the plummeting weight. Now, a tiered cake is wheeled into a ballroom.
This lavish affair is a party to celebrate the 100th performance. No wonder film producer John Wolfe wants to turn the play into a major motion picture. Here he is now, in the arms of his slightly paranoid wife.
Since the death is close at hand.
They dance.
It's probably just a draft.
This is where I come in. Leo Kopernik's the name. Big shot Hollywood director. Hired to make the film adaptation marginally less boring than the play. Easier said than done when the writer is a giant pompous ass, Mervyn Cocker Norris.
I say, you're rather tall.
Mervyn eyes the usher.
I haven't really thought about it, to be honest.
Is that what happened here?
A bandage.
Sort of, a bit of an accident backstage.
Sure, he's educated and he knows a lot of $10 words, but it's like he's never seen a film before, let alone try to write one.
Oh, Babatin.
The usher hurries away.
Here, can you stop?
No one important.
Oh, ma femmina o bestia, basta che lo spiro.
You know, at times you do rather overdo the temperamental Neapolitan.
It's a nice jacket.
Leo sips a drink and sets it on the usher's salver, then pulls out some cash.
Why don't you scare me up a real drink, will you, kid? Like a pint of rye or bourbon or motor oil if you have to.
He stuffs it in the usher's pocket.
Hop to it now, huh? In England, that actually counts as good service. I was stationed here during the war, and if anything, the locals are more uptight now than when they had the Luftwaffe overhead.
Mervyn?
John Wolfe approaches.
Shouldn't you be home? I thought we had a deadline.
I thought so too. But then our esteemed director tore up the screenplay and told me to start all over again. He's of the opinion that a modern audience will walk out in protest if they're not served at least one violent death in the opening frames. Suffice to say, we are no longer on speaking terms.
Merv!
Leo spits out something.
London's most sensitive writer.
He comes over.
How was the mousetrap, huh? Did they catch the guy who did it?
I will not stand here and be insulted.
Mervyn storms off.
Well, I guess he's going to go over there and be insulted.
A couple enters.
Ah, what passes for glamour in these parts? Sheila Sim and Dickie Attenborough. Kid likes the sound of his own voice. Even money, he makes a speech.
I suppose I have to say a few words.
Not too many.
When have I ever?
Our wedding, remember? You always miss a honeymoon.
Darlings, you're ever so kind. I'd like to ask you all to raise a metaphorical bat to the old pavilion. The mousetrap is 100, not out. Cheers.
Leo saunters to the bar.
I tell you what else is 100 not out. Petula's mother. The old coot's just crazy about seafood.
They just brought out more langoustines.
Petula's mother makes a beeline for the buffet.
Excuse me, I just need to deal with that. Mother, please.
Leo sidles up to Sheila.
Now, I'm not one to tell tales out of school, but the girls over here, they go wild for an American accent and the promise of a pair of nylons. But the husbands...
Right, I think it's time someone taught you a lesson.
They're not so easily won over.
It's only fair to warn you that I learned to box in the RAF.
Yeah? Well, I learned to fly a plane in Gleason's gym.
Leo tackles Dickie into the cake. Later, the director cleans his tux under a sink.
All of which explains, in an admittedly roundabout fashion, how I come to be in the theater's backstage area in need of a change of clothes.
He parts garments on a rack, then selects a dress shirt. Clothing and accessories fill the shelves all around him. He peers towards the back of the room.
Hello?
A figure in a long coat and hat stands silhouetted against a window. Returning the shirt to the rack, Leo cautiously approaches the motionless figure, whose face is obscured by the forward tilted hat. Leo puts up his dukes, then swats the fedora off the head of a mannequin. With a relieved grin, he slaps the mannequin's head, half covered by a black scarf. He looks over his shoulder at the room's open doors, his forehead creased in a wary expression.
Hello?
He swivels back around, only to get struck down with a ski. He starts to crawl away. His assailant, dressed just like the mannequin, picks him up and hurls him into a workbench. Spools of thread and a pair of pliers clatter onto the wooden floor. Leo grabs an axe. It wobbles in his grip, and he ditches the rubber prop. He hurls a vase that shatters against the attacker's raised arm. He grabs another, but it slips out of his grip and breaks. As he tries to crawl away, his assailant wraps a garrote around his neck. Leo struggles. His features strained in agony, he reaches for the pair of pliers on the floor. Grabbing the tool, he snips the cable around his neck. The assailant falls backwards. Leo's wide-eyed gaze lands on an exit sign above a door, and he barrels towards it. He opens the door to a solid brick wall. Behind him, his attacker steps to a sewing machine.
Oh, jeez.
The view freezes on Leo's horror-struck face.
I guess I should have seen this coming. It's always the most unlikable character gets bumped off.
The assailant brains him with the sewing machine.
It's a whodunit. You seen one? You've seen them all.
Over black, a title appears in bold white letters. See how they run. Outside the theater, a lone policeman stands in a heavy downpour. Inside, a blonde policewoman swivels her gaze away from a poster of Dickie. Words on it read, Petula Spencer presents Richard Attenborough as Detective Sergeant Trotter. Lightning flashes outside as the policewoman stands alone in the carpeted foyer. Outside, a sedan skids to a stop in the rain. The policeman opens the driver's side door. A man in a long coat and hat makes for the theater's glass doors.
We're closed.
He tries another set of doors.
Clear off.
Honestly.
The mustached 40-something man presses his ID to the glass.
Oh, I'm so sorry, sir. Inspector, Stoppard, sir, sorry. I was under strict instructions not to let anyone in.
Just open the door.
Yes, sir, of course, sorry. I didn't recognise you, sir. I've actually just been transferred myself. Thought it was leaking briefly on my patient tonight. Careful, sir. Here you come.
Stoppard enters, nursing his nose, then shakes water off his felt hat as the glass door swings shut behind him.
Constable.
Stalker, sir. Good, you're wet through, sir. Hope you don't catch a cold after that. Yep, after you, sir.
Stalker reads from a notepad as they head down a hallway.
victim's name is Leo Kopernik, sir, the film director. Suspected communist, blacklisted in Hollywood, so he came out here to work on a picture for John Wolfe. You know John Wolfe, the film producer. He made The African Queen with Humphrey Bogart. Nature, Mr. Allnut, is what we are put in this world to rise above.
That doesn't sound anything like Bogart.
No, that was Katharine Hepburn, sir. She's in it too. Wonderful actress. I go to the pictures quite a lot, actually. It's the escape, I suppose. The romance, the silver screen.
Yes, thank you, Constable.
Yes, sir.
They enter an auditorium. A group of people turns to look at them, including Mervyn, his dark-haired companion Petula, Wolf, Dickie, Sheila, and the usher. Walking with a slight limp, Stoppard heads down the aisle with Stalker in tow. The group watches from the audience seats. Climbing onto stage with the constable, Stoppard sees an overturned table and a few items scattered on the floor.
Yeah, signs of a struggle.
Actually, sir, I believe that happened when Mrs. Boyle was killed.
Mrs. Boyle?
Yes, sir. Just that woman in the front row there.
A matronly actress returns the inspector's gaze.
So she seems to have bounced back.
Oh, sorry, sir. No, she was killed in the play. Also strangled. Not that I've seen it, although I would like to. It's an Agatha Christie and do like a good murder.
Yes, thank you, Constable.
Yes, sir.
Approaching a sofa, Stoppard pulls off a sheet covering Leo's corpse. A trail of blood from his mouth forms a large stain on his shirt.
A ski did that, sir. They use it in the play, apparently. As I said, I haven't seen it. And then the large dent in the cranium is a sewing machine. Seems he was killed in the costume store initially, and then he was deposited here. Staged, so to speak.
Stoppard flashes an unamused look.
Sorry, sir.
Later, the pair enters the costume store, Stoppard leading the way with a flashlight. They come across the ski used by the assailant.
Yeah, that's the ski that he took in the face, sir. And I'm afraid it was downhill from there. Oh, sorry, sir. That one just came out on its own.
Stoppard steps closer to the mannequin, picks up the fedora off the floor, and sets it back on the smooth head.
Seems he came down here for a change of clothes.
Why?
In the ballroom, Stoppard studies a decorative sign bearing the number 10 and the word performances.
It was a party to celebrate the 100th performance, sir. The other knot must have when the victim upset the sponge. And he then proceeded to sit in the assortment of crustaceans.
In a flashback, Dickie sends Leo crashing into the seafood buffet.
Told he was intoxicated, sir. As a newt.
This was actually a lot more fun than I thought it would be.
In a split-screen view, Leo shoves a chair aside and staggers off as the shocked guests look on.
Then he left. No one saw him again until the body was discovered.
That's correct, sir. Perhaps they were all in on it together, sir.
Stoppard eyes the constable, who shrugs. Later, Stoppard forces Leo's mouth open as Stalker observes diligently. Behind them, a policeman snaps a photo of some evidence. Petula shifts restlessly in her seat.
Looks like the killer tried to pull out the victim's tongue.
Why would anyone do a thing like that?
Excuse me, Chief Inspector.
It's just Inspector.
Yes, of course. Inspector. I hate to interrupt. I do. There really is nothing
Petula
worse.
Spencer, sir, prominent theatre impresario.
Yes, thank you, Constable.
Tell me, how much longer do you intend to keep us all hostage here?
Or is that the idea? Let the gold jade wince? Gather all the suspects under one roof and then interrogate each of us in turn until the mystery's solved?
Marvin Cocker Norris, overrated playwright.
Celebrated playwright?
Oh, I'm so sorry, sir. I can't read my own handwriting.
Not that we are suspects, necessarily.
Stoppard holds Mervyn's gaze.
Are we suspects? It was just a reference to Agatha Christie and her penchant for denouement in which the detective gathers the suspect. I dare say that's not... Please, continue.
Yes, thank you, Mervyn. Inspector, I want you to know that I have nothing but the utmost respect for the Metropolitan Police. But, well, do you think you might be finished in time for curtain up tomorrow night?
Oh, for goodness sake.
John Wolfe, esteemed film producer.
Yes, thank you, Constable.
This is a murder investigation. Surely that takes precedence. Sold out or not.
Yes, it's all going to plan for you, isn't it, Wolfie? You want the run to end.
I want nothing of the sort. It's the decent thing to do, that's all. Close the theatre out of respect for Leo. Such a tragic loss.
Inspector, I implore you not to overreact. I would hate to have to go over your head and talk directly to your superiors.
Oh, we wouldn't want that, now would we, madam? But I'm afraid that under the circumstances is a precaution.
Precaution? He's already dead.
He is, madam. But until we have an idea as to a likely motive, who's to say this is the end of it?
What is that supposed to mean?
We are no longer merely suspects. We are also potential victims.
Stoppard nods.
Oh.
Wolf's wife startles awake in her seat.
God, I wasn't in that, was I? Must look dreadful.
Daytime, a high view looks down on Stoppard's sedan driving sluggishly down a narrow street. The car turns sharply into the out tunnel of the Scotland Yard building. In a busy bullpen, a staffer carries a box of files. All male personnel occupy desks with telephones and bulky typewriters. One shakes hands with a lady. An officer operates a switchboard. Stoppard arrives and sheds his coat. A constable brushes past him. Around the bullpen, men in suits hunch over paperwork. Stoppard furrows his brow and blows his nose in a handkerchief.
Stoppard! My office.
Hello, sir.
With the commissioner.
What in God's name possessed you to close down the ambassadors?
A protocol, sir. It's a crime scene.
No, it's a public relations disaster is what it is.
Public what, sir?
Stalker!
Sir.
She brings a stack of newspapers.
Yes, please. Yeah. Not to put too fine a point on it, Inspector, but your latest blunder is front page news. Fleet Street is all over this like hot jam on a Devonshire scone. You are slap bang in the crosshairs. Now, we need to do everything we can to make sure the bullet doesn't miss you and hit me.
Yeah, of course, sir, yes.
Good. Then you'll inform the theatre at once.
Well, I thought as a precaution
the Home Secretary is a close personal friend of Agatha Christie. His brother-in-law is Rex Harrison.
Wonderful actor.
Yes, thank you, Constable.
Sir?
It has actually worked in our favour to have the press distracted like this. It means we can keep a lid on the Rillington Place murders.
The Rillington Place murders? Yes, what's that?
Oh, blimey. Haven't you heard? We have a serial killer on the loose. You didn't think all of this was for you now, did you?
Stoppard glances towards the bullpen.
No.
No.
Of course not. But have all the resources been allocated to this other investigation?
No. Not all of them, no. I understand you met WPC Stalker last night.
I did, yes. Constable.
Inspector.
A very capable officer. Or at least she will be once she gets the proper instruction.
Sorry, sir, I'm not sure I... You don't mean you want me to...
Yes, I do. I'd like you to show her the ropes. I'm hoping some of her enthusiasm for police work might rub off on you.
But the bullet, sir, is that why?
This is not a debate, Stoppard. I have a reputation as a moderniser. I have to be seen to keep it up. I have said in public that I think women are the future of the force.
Absolutely, sir. I agree. But we're not looking for stolen sweets or a lost bleeding bicycle. This is a murder investigation and she is inexperienced.
They were inexperienced in the war. Ask Jerry how that turned out.
Yes, sir, but...
Will be all. Thank you.
Commissioner.
Inspector.
Constable.
Inspector.
They head out.
Commissioner.
Constable.
Sorry again about last night, sir, with the rain and everything.
Water under the bridge, Constable. No harm done.
He doubles over near a stack of papers. He dons his hat.
You all right?
Yeah. Do we have an address for the victim?
Yeah. It is Laurel Canyon, Hollywood, USA.
Where was he staying in England, Constable?
She flips through her notepad. Later, Stoppard's sedan rolls down a hedge-lined driveway towards the entrance of the Savoy Hotel. He and Stalker step through revolving doors into the posh lobby. In an elevator, they stand behind a tall manager, sneaking glances at the back of his head. He leads them down a corridor.
If I am honest, Monsieur Kopunik, he was not a very good guest.
In arrears, was he?
No, but... he did not pay for his room. Monsieur Wolf did.
He goes to unlock a door.
What part of France are you from, sir?
Belgium.
All right.
The manager lets the pair into Leo's messy room.
My.
Bottles and dirty tableware lie strewn around.
Bloody pigsty. They don't clean the rooms at the Savoy?
Alas, not this one.
Stoppard finds a pocketbook.
The maids, they refuse. We offer them more money, but still they say no. There was an incident. Always avec Monsieur Kopunik, there was an incident.
The manager steps to a window and opens the curtains, letting light into the room. Stalker finds the bottom half of a torn script with a stain on the cover page. She flips to the first page. Nearby, Stoppard eyes a broken table lamp on the floor. Stalker pulls a nylon stocking out of a drawer.
Thank you, Constable.
Oh, sorry, sir.
Did one of these incidents ever turn violent?
Oui. Une fois.
In a flashback...
How dare you call me a bad writer?
I didn't say that. I said it's bad writing.
I did the best I could within the confines of the genre, and Wolf loves it!
Wolf wouldn't know a good script if it came up and bit him in the ass. It's horseshit!
No, it isn't. Not all of it!
All right, what I read is horseshit.
The manager unlocks the room.
I read enough, pal, to know that nobody gets killed in the first 10 pages.
You charlatan! Give it back!
Listen to me. Listen. I need to go in a completely different direction.
As both men tug on the script, it rips in two. Mervyn topples backward, knocking over the table lamp. He springs back up.
I'll kill you for this, Kopunik. You bastard!
The manager stands in the doorway.
That's that then, sir. It's as good as a confession.
In the car...
It's not jumping conclusions, Constable.
No, sir.
Least we can do is talk to this other party.
Yes, sir. Cocker Norris, sir.
Stalker writes, do not jump to conclusions.
Tell me, did you write everything down in that little notebook?
Only if it's important, sir.
How do you know if it's important?
Well, I'll just sort of put everything in as we go, and then down the line, when we know what's important, we'll know that it's already in the notebook.
In the passenger seat, she continues writing.
So you do write everything down?
Yeah, everything.
That's what I thought.
Stoppard pulls away from the hotel premises. Elsewhere, Stalker gazes spellbound at a taxidermied hawk on a wall perch. Stoppard joins her.
You're just in time for 11s.
Leaving the constable staring at the bird, he strolls across the well-appointed living room, taking his gloves off. Stopping by a writing desk, he finds the upper half of the torn script under some stationery. He takes a look, then nudges it back in place. He and Stalker sink into a plush love seat. She awkwardly scoots to the edge of the sofa and sets her hat and notepad on her lap. Facing a table heaped with files, she picks one up, sending numerous others sliding to the floor. She throws Stoppard a quick glance. As she tidies up, a hand lifts the needle from a spinning record.
You must excuse the désordre. It's research for the film adaptation. Police statements, court reports, newspaper cuttings. The mousetrap is actually based on a real-life case. Nettle tea?
I appreciate you've not yet had time to come to terms with the death of Mr. Copernic.
Is it true his tongue was pulled out?
I'm afraid I can't divulge details of an ongoing investigation,
sir. It was disgusting.
Amore, non posso fatica così.
What?
E non così pot!
The dark-haired man flings his apron to the floor and storms out. Mervyn flashes a smile.
That's Gio. Nephew of mine. Very hot-headed. I wonder if it isn't all the fumes, you know, from the chemicals. He's an amateur taxidermist. He has a fascination with the macabre. I call it his Stymphalian bird series.
Stoppard paces.
Macabre in a strictly ornithological sense, that is.
Mervyn's gaze flits from Stalker to the inspector.
You wanted to ask me about Leo?
We heard there was an argument at the Savoy, and I noticed you had the other half of this.
Mervyn takes the bottom half of a script from Stoppard, who resumes his seat.
Inspector, that was a contretemps, nothing more.
Read that term.
I'll kill you for this, Kopernik, you bastard.
Mervyn parts his lips.
Well, obviously, I've taken out of context. Those words were spoken in anger and under extreme provocation. We had creative differences, that's all.
In a flashback with Leo.
How did you like The Mousetrap?
Oh, yeah, the play. Yeah, I didn't see it yet.
Well, if you'd like, I can pre-see this.
No. I got the basics. It's a whodunit, right? So, you got a dead body, a detective, and then all the suspects, rather conveniently, end up in a remote country house together.
In a nutshell, our task will be to present this improbable series of events to an audience of moderate intelligence in a manner that does not cause too much offense.
Easy. Flashbacks.
No.
Leo startles.
No what?
No flashbacks. They are crass, lazy, and they interrupt the flow of the story. In my opinion, they are the last refuge of a moribund imagination. Whatever next? A caption that says 3 weeks later.
Text appears 3 weeks later.
Merv, will you come on? This is crazy. Will you open the door?
I'm not coming out until Wolf gets here.
Wolf arrives at the apartment.
What is it this time?
I'll tell you what it is. I pitched a new ending. Cockamamie novice over here locks himself in the bathroom.
Is this instead of the car chase?
As well as. I think he thinks denouement is French for shootout.
Will you at least hear me out first and then tell me you don't like it? Come on, I storyboarded it for you. Come on, have a seat.
Why can't we just have the detective gather everyone in the drawing room and then reveal to them who did it?
Why? Because it's old, it's tired. It's been done 1,000 times.
So then who explains to the audience what on earth's going on?
No one. I don't know. The killer.
Now you see what I have to put up with.
Will you please have a seat? So, a remote country house. We got all the suspects gathered in the drawing room, right? So far, so horrific. Suddenly, the lights go out.
He shows sketches.
A hero grips his Colt Special. Edges into the hall. Killer's got a hostage, can't get a clear shot. Suddenly, kaboom, the place goes up in flames. Blam, blam, a hero plugs the killer. One in the gut, one in the knee, oh. Then, all of a sudden, his goddamn gun jams. He's a sitting duck.
A sketch shows a nude woman.
Sorry, not that one. Sorry about this. He's a sitting duck.
He continues.
A killer. Dying, but not dead. He takes aim. Boom! He fires. Out of nowhere, our hero cop's partner dives in slow motion. Takes a bullet. Ah! Our hero cradles his partner like a father would his child. His face, a gumbo of emotions. We hold on the inferno. Then we pan left. A dead butler.
The body sits upright on a sofa.
Hank Williams plays us out. I saw the light.
Leo drops the last sketch. He gazes searchingly at Wolf and Mervyn seated across from him.
You hate it?
No, I don't hate it.
But you don't love it.
Of course he doesn't. It's preposterous and totally out of keeping with the rest of the film.
Oh, who cares? The audience only ever remembers the last 20 minutes.
Oh, poppycock.
Hitchcock, actually.
How does he get the gun?
He's a cop.
Police are not armed in England.
What? How do they kill the bad guys?
They don't. They ask them to stop in the name of the law.
Huh.
Leo goes to a window.
He fought in the war, so he kept his service revolver. God damn it, we're gonna have to pick this up another time.
He puts his coat on.
Say, Merv, you wouldn't want to, lend me this pad, would you? Just for the night. Only I got this dame parked outside. I want to impress. As in, she actually is a dame. And, my place ain't exactly the Savoy.
I thought his place exactly was the Savoy.
No, he didn't take up residence there till a month later. And the production company footed the bill when he did. How he finagled that, I'll never know. Either I need a new agent or he had dirt on Wolf.
Stalker takes a hesitant sip of the nettle tea, then forces it down.
Did you ever meet these women? Who were they?
Girls he met during the war who had low standards and even lower self-esteem. I never had the pleasure.
Mervyn lowers his eyes suddenly.
Oh, wait. Tell a lie.
He storms out of Leo's hotel room.
Come on. When I said we should tear up the script, I didn't mean literally.
Mervyn passes a bespectacled woman and a preteen boy in the corridor.
Hello, Leo.
Well,
What is that doing here?
He was Kopernik's son.
Peas in a pod.
And the mother?
I didn't get a good look. A plain girl, rather homely. Dark hair, glasses, thick lenses.
So there we have it, sir. Cherchez la femme.
What?
It's Belgian, sir. It means look for the woman.
I know what it means, Constable. What woman?
The mother of Kopernik's illegitimate son. Cochran Norris couldn't remember her name, but I bet it's in that little black book. You know, the one that you found in the hotel room, sir. If we find her, we have our answer. We need to get a police sketch artist down here at once before he forgets anything.
She finds Stoppard's gaze boring into her.
I'm doing it again, aren't I, sir? Jumping to conclusions.
A little bit.
Sorry.
Constable.
He reclines, tilting his hat forward.
I have a very important mission for you. Mm-hmm. I need you to find the telephone box. Call the station. Get an address for John Wolfe, the film producer. And I'll wait for you here.
Romulus Films, Soho, sir. I wrote it down.
You did?
Mm-hmm. He sits up begrudgingly.
Right. Well done.
Thank you.
Shall we?
They drive away from Mervyn's apartment building. Now, words appear over the exterior of a soundstage, Shepperton Studios. Inside, a short-haired woman in a skirt suit follows Wolf.
A telegram came for you.
He reads its contents.
Well,
bad news?
It's the studio. Grace Kelly's doing a Hitchcock picture for Warner, so it's dial M for maybe next time.
Grace Kelly?
Yes.
For the part you promised Sheila?
Yes, that's right. Which is why this is such good news.
The woman strides out through a small doorway.
Anne? Darling, what's the matter?
You do know a promise is only a promise if you keep it.
What do you mean?
I mean, you promised me a night out months ago.
I have been so busy lately.
Yes, I know. I am your assistant.
I promise, as soon as I have a moment to spare.
Well, you're free on Wednesday.
Am I?
Mm.
You sure?
Yes.
I thought I was... No, well, you should know. You are my assistant, after all.
Mm.
Well, that's settled, then. It's a date.
People walk
I
past.
I will take you out.
I'm afraid, Mr. Wolf, you really must be going now, otherwise you'll be late.
Ah, oh, right. Thank you.
Mm.
Wolf leans in for a kiss.
No, I'm serious. You do actually need to get back to Romulus.
Oh, right. Yes.
In a by lane, Stoppard's car sits parked between two buildings, a short distance from the Romulus Films office. He dozes against the car window.
This is exciting, isn't it, sir? I'd say this is the type of thing that made you want to become a police officer, was it? Me? I just sort of fell into it, really. They needed people after the war, and I needed the money, so... No, it's true, the errors can be unsociable, but I can't type or stand the sight of blood, so that ruled out secretary for me. You don't mind if I pick your brains, do you, sir? Only I have sergeant's exams in a month, and I just have one or two questions that I'd love to run by you.
Actually, Constable, I've just remembered I have a... dentist appointment.
Oh, sorry, sir. I didn't know you were suffering.
Just a routine checkup.
What shall I do, sir?
Wait here.
But what if Wolf turns up, sir?
Won't be long. You have your notebook.
He ambles off.
Keep your eyes peeled.
Yes, sir.
Heading up a staircase near the office, Stoppard disappears from view. Stalker gazes out the car's windshield. Her alert eyes remain fixed ahead. She positions her pencil over her notepad. Meanwhile, on a cobblestone pavement, Stoppard pulls open the door to a pub. Stepping inside, he approaches the counter and takes his hat off. From the car, Stalker watches a hackney carriage stopping by the Romulus Films office at the street corner. Wolf climbs out.
Oh, you're joking.
He checks his watch.
Oh, no.
The cab drives off as he enters the building. The stalker scribbles vigorously. Her pencil tip breaks.
Oh, God.
She shuts the notepad and climbs out of the sedan. Taking short, brisk steps, she hurries to the staircase running adjacent to the building. As she makes her way up, a split-screen view reveals Stoppard holding up a near-empty glass.
Follow this up with another.
Stalker hurries past storefronts along a busy pavement. In the pub, a hand places a drink on the countertop. Rounding a corner, Stalker continues down another pavement, peering at door signs along the way. Stoppard drains his glass. Stalker stops outside a white door and eyes four call buttons, each labelled with the name of a different dentist. She presses all four. She steps back from the door. Stoppard exits the pub next door, freezing as he notices her. He sheepishly eyes the sign for the pub as he adjusts his coat.
There you are, Constable.
I'm looking all over for you.
In Wolf's office.
So I gather it was you that paid for Mr. Copernic's rather extravagant hotel suite.
No, nothing unusual in that, Inspector. I'm afraid a producer is expected to indulge the whims of the talent, especially when they're American.
It's still a pretty penny, a room at the Savoy.
Par for the course. When I was in the Congo for the African Queen, Houston and Bogart refused to drink the water, insisted on bourbon, even to brush their teeth. Not so easy to get hold of in the jungle, I can assure you.
Huh. You know, Constable Stalker here is a great admirer of that film, aren't you, Constable?
Stalker shoots the inspector an icy look.
It's a marvellous film, sir.
Why, thank you, Constable.
Yeah, encyclopedia. Cinematic encyclopedia.
I wouldn't say that.
Yeah.
Right.
Being humble.
No.
So it's not true that Copernic had dirt on you?
Wolf sets down a letter opener he was toying with.
Who told you that?
Now, split views show a young woman playing the drums. The musician's fingers dance over the keys of his saxophone. As the jazz band plays on a small stage, Anne and Wolf sit cuddled up in a booth. Leo saunters over, grinning as he leans over the booth and eyes the oblivious couple.
Well now, what do we have here?
They separate.
Now, Wolfie, sit in a quiet corner, all very nice and intimate. Hmm? Say, you wouldn't mind if I joined you, would you?
Not at all, oh boy.
Leo points to Anne.
And you must be Mrs. Wolf, huh? Swell to make your acquaintance.
No, Leo, this is Anne. She's my assistant.
Ah. Working late, huh?
She and Wolf exchange a look.
If you'll excuse me, excuse me.
She gets out of the booth.
You have a nice night now.
Flashing a curt smile, she scurries off.
Well, now. This puts me in a tough spot.
Leo picks up Wolf's martini.
That I'm afraid I'm going to have to take advantage of.
He eats the olive garnish.
He asked to be put up at the Savoy, and I agreed. I knew it wouldn't be for long. That is, just until I found the right moment to tell my wife.
Stoppard nods.
I see. Well,
he licks his finger.
We'll be in touch if there's anything else.
Taking a business card, he gets up to leave.
Constable, shall we?
Stalker rises reluctantly and follows him. Back in the sedan.
But sir, Wolf killed Copernic to hush up the affair. Case closed.
I think if that was the case, he wouldn't have volunteered the information.
So then he's in the clear?
No, not necessarily. He might have killed Copernic for another reason entirely.
Tell you, I'll never get the hang of this in time for sergeant's exams.
Stoppard hesitates, then leans back.
Constable, about earlier, I know it looked like I'd just come out of the pub.
You had just come out of the pub.
That's right. But I'd only gone in there to get rid of the taste of the mouthwash.
So you had a gin, sir?
It's an antiseptic. I had a feeling.
I thought you said it was a routine checkup.
He arches his eyebrows.
I see we've read the chapter on interrogation techniques.
Sir, I know I haven't done anything yet to impress you or to inspire any confidence, and I know you'd probably rather that I wasn't on the case, but I didn't ask to be put on this case either, sir. I was nervous, and I still am, and I'm probably trying a bit too hard, but, you know, even if I do make mistakes or if I jump to conclusions or talk a little bit too much, that has been said. I just want you to know that you can trust me, sir.
She faces the front.
Okay, good.
Keeping his eyes averted, he leans forward and starts the engine. The sedan drives off past Wolf's office. By night, a view of a wartime advertisement painted on a brick wall lowers to Stoppard's car parked in front of the building. He heads in. In side-by-side views, Stoppard enters his house while Stalker climbs up a long staircase. Hanging up her coat, she looks into a modest living room and smiles at an older woman babysitting a pair of sleepy children. In a workshop, Stoppard uses a pedal-operated scroll saw to cut out jigsaw puzzle shapes stenciled on flat boards. He pauses to top up his drink, recoiling slightly from his glass before taking a sip. At Stalker's, the children lie tucked into their twin beds. Half closing their bedroom door, Stalker flicks off a light and steps out. In the dimly lit workshop, cardboard boxes containing jigsaw pieces sit stacked inside a crib. Stoppard slouches in his chair. Daytime. Sprawled face down in his bed, Stoppard knocks the alarm clock off his nightstand. Outside the theater, Stalker, in uniform, drums her fingers against a ledger, which she holds against her torso. A sedan pulls up to the street corner.
Oh, you're joking.
Constable!
Commissioner.
Stoppard about?
No, sir, he's not yet made it in this morning.
It's almost 11 o'clock.
He had a dentist appointment, sir. Filling, I think he said it was. A molar, it might have been.
I have been summoned to the Home Secretary. He wants a debrief. I said I had good news.
He purses his lips as he sweeps his gaze up and down the street. Stalker glances at a poster for the Mousetrap behind them.
Have you seen the play, sir?
Oh, yes. I'm afraid I took the wife for her birthday.
Oh.
Of course, it didn't fool me for a moment. I knew he did it right away. She was baffled, though. Even after the chap explained everything. It was a trying night for all concerned. I'll stick to flowers in future.
Yes, always a safe bet, sir.
Sorry. Please.
Having nearly hit a woman pushing a stroller, Stoppard staggers out of his car, then frees his overcoat stuck in the door. He comes over.
Good morning. Commissioner.
Inspector. Is it wise to eat so many mints?
How do you mean, sir?
Well, haven't you just been to the dentist?
Stalker nods pointedly.
Yes, that's right, sir. Yeah, it was just a checkup.
She touches her teeth.
Although I did have a filling as well, since I was there.
I've come down here for an update, Inspector.
We have good news, sir.
We do?
Yes, sir, isn't that what you told the Home Secretary?
Yes, that's what I told the Home Secretary on the telephone. I came down here to get it.
So we don't have good news?
We do have a witness, sir.
To the murder?
Yeah. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? No, one of the ushers saw a suspicious character. He's waiting for us inside.
Very well. I'll tell the Home Secretary we have a promising lead, and I'll rely on you not to make a liar out of me. Constable.
Commissioner.
Inspector.
Commissioner.
The Commissioner strides off.
Constable.
Inspector.
In the foyer, the pair interviews the lanky usher.
So, Dennis, I understand that you saw something the other night.
Yeah.
What did you see?
Well, I'd gone to get a bottle of scotch for the dead man. This was before, you know, he died.
And then you came back, and that's when you saw the suspicious character.
Exactly. Well, sort of. Didn't get a very good look, if I'm honest. He had on, like, a darkish overcoat.
I see. Anything else?
Pair of trousers and a hat that was on his head.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, a soft felt hat.
Stalker jots it down.
What about a physical description? Was he a tall man, short, thick-set? Oh,
just average, I'd say.
Average height or average build?
Both.
No, don't ask me. I don't know. I'm asking you.
Average height, medium build.
Did you say like the inspector?
Yeah, I suppose so, pretty much.
So what did he do that made you suspicious?
It wasn't so much what he did, it was more, you know, the way he did it.
Right. How did he do it?
Well, sort of suspiciously.
Pursing his lips, Stoppard drops his gaze and shifts on his feet.
Well, this has been great. Off you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dennis leaves.
That was good. Do you think that went well?
Stoppard heads off.
I think it's time we talked to that actor who had a fight with Kopenick.
Mr. Attenborough, sir.
That's the one. Famous, is he?
You're pulling my leg, sir. You've never heard a dickie. Richard Attenborough. Pinky Brown, Brighton Rock. You must have.
You wanted a recording of my voice. Well, here it is. What you want me to say is, I love you.
Keep in mind that we're here to conduct an interview as part of a murder investigation, not an article of Sight and Sound magazine, yes?
Yes, sir.
He turns to a door.
Come in, darling.
Dickie sits in his dressing room.
Inspector Stopper.
I say, a real-life detective. Scotland Yard and everything. And you are...
Stalker flashes a starstruck smile.
This is Constable Stalker.
Stoppard tucks his ID away.
Oh, I like the way you did that. Very natural.
I hope you don't mind, sir, but I just want to say bravo and encore.
All right, thank you, Constable.
Yes, thank you, Constable. Are you a lover of theatre? I can get you tickets if you like.
I would like, sir. Yes, very
Stop
much.
Stoppard eyes a hat and coat on a stand.
Do you get a professional take on it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have so many questions.
I have one or two of my own.
I dare say that you do.
I understand that you and Kopernik came to blows the night in question. Was there a particular reason for the ill feeling?
Tell me, Inspector, did you get your limp during the war?
Stoppard furrows his brow at the actor.
But it's very slight. I noticed it the other night when you were on stage. I thought I might borrow it, if you don't mind. It's always good for the lead character to have a physical defect. Speaks to a troubled soul.
It was me, Inspector. You need look no further.
I arrest you for the murder of Leo Cochran.
No, not yet.
Oh, sorry, sir. I was a particular reason for the ill feeling.
Yes, well, Leo had his eye on Sheila, you see, and I took exception.
He was a real hound, Inspector.
At the party, Leo and Sheila stand by the bar.
Come on, play nice. Maybe I can help you.
Help me? To do what?
Bag the lead role in the film of the Mousetrap. Top billing. Make you a star.
But I have bagged the lead role.
Yeah, who told you that, Wolfie?
He is the producer.
Honey, he just cuts the checks. I'm the director. Without me, there is no movie. You understand? You got a problem, buddy?
Dennis presents a whiskey.
Keep the change and the glass.
And the studio, don't they have a say in it?
Rumor is they want to put a name in the picture that people have heard of. Bona fide Hollywood star. They like Grace Kelly. Never heard of her?
Leo swigs directly from the bottle.
Don't worry. They can be talked around. Got a very, silver tongue.
He waggles his tongue and grins. Later, he tackles Dickie into the celebratory cake.
I won't lie, Inspector. I was not entirely sorry to learn of his demise, but I had no part in it. Much like the film adaptation of The Mousetrap, it would seem.
Oh, come now, darling. You don't know that. Wolf promised you the role. He's a man of his word. He went to Eton.
Oh, wake up, Dickie. He's a man of whatever word will get his film made. And that contract business with Chew is coming apart at the seams.
Chew?
Bless you, sir.
No, as in Petula Spencer. She sold Wolf the film rights. Well, about those tickets, is there a day that suits you better?
I'm generally free on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And Thursdays.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you, madam.
No, not at all. We'll be sure to let you know if anything else springs to mind. I'm sure it's always the insignificant detail that catches the killer in the end. Isn't that so, Inspector?
Stoppard nods and walks out. Stalker pauses at the door.
I don't usually have a lot on weekends either. Or Mondays. For the tickets.
Constable!
Sir!
The inspector's car drives away. Now, in a waiting area, a gliding view takes in a motley crew of performers seated in a row. Among them, a moustached man in a ruff cradles a dog. A strong man eats a banana next to a pair of women in top hats and bow ties. Stoppard and Stalker sit at the end of the row beside a ventriloquist and his dummy. Behind them, a door bears a sign reading Auditions, with an arrow pointing away. The dummy swivels its head towards Stoppard, who glances at it uneasily. Petula's bespectacled mother appears in a doorway sporting an oversized coat.
She'll see you now.
Petula watches a hat juggler.
So, you own this theatre?
Yes. Humble beginnings. You'll have to excuse Mother. She's not been herself since Father died in the First Great War. It's been a long 30 years.
It's nice that you gave her a job.
Well, how else is she going to pay the rent? I don't have the spare room at a discount as it is. Yes, no, you can stop there. We get the idea. Bravo.
I understand that you handled the sale of the Mousetrap film rights to John Wolfe.
Yes, that's right, I did. Wait, why? What's he been saying? Oh, he's such a crybaby. Honestly, he acts as though I put a gun to his head.
In a flashback to Wolf's office, Petula pops champagne.
Hang on a minute, is this important?
I doubt it. What does it say?
No motion picture based on the stage play The Mousetrap is to enter into production until a minimum of 6 months have elapsed since the end of its first theatrical run.
Oh, you don't need to worry about that. So who done it? As soon as word gets out who did do it, audiences are bound to drop off. Come on, sign on the dotted line, and I'll make a toast.
Wolf scribbles his signature below Petula's.
And, darling, the next contract I sign will be our marriage certificate. Well, first it'll be the divorce papers, but then our marriage certificate.
They kiss. His wife enters and he drops it.
Hey, Dana, darling. What a pleasant surprise, you know. Chew and, Anne?
I do. Dear girl, what on earth are you doing down there?
I just fell over. Excuse me.
Anne leaves.
Honestly. It's like having Buster Keaton for an assistant.
Now, I've just come from Madame Zina.
Darling, I really wish you wouldn't see that.
Please don't call her a charlatan.
I was going to say crackpot.
Edana sets down a card showing a heart pierced by three swords.
What's this?
It's a tarot card.
I can see that. What does it mean?
Betrayal.
Three split views frame Wolf, Petula, and Edana. In the present, Stalker takes notes.
Ooh. Betrayal as in his affair, not the contract. That was above board. Is above board. Agatha insisted on that clause, not me. No, she's fiercely protective of her own work, you see, because, well, she has to be. People get so riled up. She's had death threats, you know. Poor girl can't write so much as a letter to the Times without a deluge of legal action and spurious claims she stole this plot or that character.
Isn't that what happened here, though? Isn't the Mousetrap based on a true story?
Yes. Well, originally, I mean, tangentially. In any case, that's the reason Wolf was so keen to shut the theatre the other night. He can't make his film until the play ends its run in the West End. As it is, what with the play being such a phenomenal success, he's stuck in theatrical purgatory. Mm-hmm. He's a ruthless customer, is Wolf. He'll stop at nothing to get his film made.
Now a street lamp illuminates Stoppard's car parked near a pub, inside which he and Stalker nurse a drink each.
It's definitely Wolf, sir. Not 100%, more like 73-74%, I'd say. He killed Kopernik in the theatre to force it to close down so that he could make his film, he could marry his mistress, and then he could get shot of a blackmailer.
It's not Wolf. It's too elaborate. Burn the place down, if that's what you want. Besides, doesn't he need a director to make a film?
Well, then it's back to Cocker Norris, process of elimination.
No, it's not Mervyn.
The tone business. And he clearly didn't like Leo, did he?
Stoppard nibbles on snacks.
People don't rip out other people's tongues because of creative differences. They do it out of revenge or rage because they've lost a loved one and they can't forgive or forget, so they just stew and fester alone in the dark until finally it all comes out in a sudden frenzied act of violence.
He sips his drink. In her civilian clothes, Stalker scratches her chin.
How did you get the limp, sir, if you don't mind me asking?
In the war. Got shot in the Italian Alps.
Mm. Sounds painful.
Would you...
Sorry, sir.
No, that's very funny. Is there a Mr. Stalker? Stalker?
I'm afraid he died in the war, sir.
Children?
A boy and a girl.
Can't be easy.
What about you? Do you have any family, sir?
I came close once, yeah. I had an unfaithful wife.
Oh.
She was 8 months pregnant when she told me I wasn't the father. I made her cotton and everything.
That's awful, sir. Sorry.
He shrugs.
Landlord.
Yes, sir?
Another round.
I don't know. Should we maybe get going, sir? Got work tomorrow.
Later, the pub door opens.
Go, I'll clear off before I call the police.
Stoppard stumbles out.
Sorry again. Thank you. Are you sure you're all right to drive, sir?
Absolutely.
Oh.
I can run you home if you like.
Later still, the sedan travels down a residential street with Stalker behind the wheel. Stoppard lies slumped in the back, his eyes closed. The car turns in by the inspector's house. Stalker leans him against the outside wall.
Pop you there.
I didn't take it from here, Constable.
He sinks to the ground before she can unlock the door.
Oh, sir.
Indoors, she removes his hat and coat, then manoeuvres him onto his bed.
There we go.
Laying him down, she props his head on a pillow, then straightens. Something catches her eye, and she takes a step towards a shelf on which she sees a framed wedding picture of Stoppard and his bespectacled wife. Fishing out her notepad, Stalker opens it, then flips back a few pages. With a glance at the photo, she eyes her notes, which read, "Mystery woman at Savoy, mother of Kopernik's son, plain girl, rather homely, dark hair, glasses, thick frames." Stalker studies the woman in the photo, who matches the description. She glances at Stoppard on the bed, then closes her notepad and flicks off the night lamp. Beside a staircase, she hangs the inspector's coat and hat on a stand and turns to leave. She stops and spins around. Silhouetted against a window, the garments form the outline of a shadowy figure. Stalker backs away with a grim expression. Daytime. Two officers loiter outside the inn tunnel at the Scotland Yard building. Indoors, a hand pushes a cup of tea across a desk. A surly officer glances up from his magazine.
Morning, sir.
What do you want?
The other night, sir, the dead Yank, Inspector Stoppard got the call and not Leake or Priestley.
So?
Stalker seats a biscuit tin on the desk and opens it. Eyeing the biscuits inside, the surly officer sets his magazine down and leans forward.
Leake was in Skegness on his honeymoon, and Priestley took the Rillington Place call.
Stalker shuts the lid over his hand.
What time?
11:30. Book at bedtime was on.
She lifts the lid, allowing him to take a biscuit. He moves the teacup closer.
Did you ever meet Stoppard's wife, sir?
I did.
You don't happen to remember her name, do you?
The officer's eyes flick to the tin. Stalker lets him take another biscuit.
It was...
He gazes off briefly.
Mrs. Stoppard.
He bites into the biscuit.
Bruno.
Stalker moves off. Gazing after her, the officer sips his tea. She settles down at her desk in the near-empty bullpen. Later, her colleagues occupy the surrounding desks. Still seated at hers, Stalker flips open Leo's pocketbook, then dials one of several numbers on a page.
Hello, is this Abigail? Hello, is this Beryl? I am a friend of Leo Kopernik's. Beryl?
She flips to another page.
Is Geraldine there by any chance?
She places the receiver in its cradle, then glimpses Stoppard entering his office adjacent to the commissioner's. Seen through his door's glass panel, the inspector sits at his desk. Stalker opens her notepad to the page bearing the note, "Do not jump to conclusions." She glances around hesitantly, then rises from her seat and strides to the commissioner's office with a purposeful gait.
Oh, Constable.
Sir.
Did Dickie ever come through on those theatre tickets? I thought of going and maybe the play's the thing. Ties us all together. Would you like to tag along?
Yes, sir.
The commissioner steps out.
What is it, Constable?
Nothing, sir. Do you want a cup of tea?
Stoppard goes back in.
Listen to me, Stalker. No one is ever going to take you seriously as a police officer
if you act like a tea lady. Do you hear me?
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Milk and two sugars.
They both nod, then the commissioner heads back inside.
Commissioner.
At night, patrons file into the theatre. Stalker waits in the foyer near the box office, while nearby, Mervyn addresses the usher.
I said, who do you want, Agatha Christie or Mervyn Cochran Morris? Anyone can do her, but only I can do me.
Strunz, Agus, Vicus.
Stoppard sees Geo, who glares across the room at Mervyn, then storms off.
I'll take the bare bones of the story, a rather mundane tale of child abuse, and make it my own.
Wolf enters the theatre with Anne, who wears a fur wrap.
Here we are.
Stoppard produces two tickets.
These aren't together, sir.
No. But we can cover more ground that way. Keep your eyes peeled.
Yes, sir.
In the packed auditorium, well-dressed audience members take their seats. Sporting a simple, collared dress, Stalker lowers into her balcony seat, then spots the inspector in the stalls below.
Cheers.
Shuffling past others in his row, he settles into his seat. Wolf and Anne sit side by side in the audience, as do Mervyn and Geo. Stalker smiles as the theatre lights dim and the stage lights come on.
Hello?
In character, Sheila walks onto the stage.
Hello? Is anyone there?
Who's calling at this late hour?
Backstage, Dickie accepts a pair of skis from a stagehand and prepares to go on.
That was Scotland Yard. They're sending out an inspector.
In this unseasonable blizzard? What on earth for? Good Lord.
Stalker jumps at a shadowy figure crossing a window.
Inspector!
Thank you.
Dickie enters the stage.
Good evening.
He sets the skis down.
I'm Detective Sergeant Trotter. Please excuse the limp, an old war wound playing up in the cold. I'm assuming you were warned of my arrival?
Mervyn wears a bored look.
Apropos of nothing, I'm a magistrate. Also, he looks too young to be an inspector.
Well, I'm old enough to remember the Corrigan case. Yes, a dreadful business. Two brothers who put their faith in the British social services. A sorry tale of abuse that ended in tragedy. Yes, it was in all of the papers.
Geo, I can't sit through this again. I'm sorry.
Mervyn rises from his seat.
One died, the other left traumatized. I shudder to think what an ordeal like that might do to a vulnerable mind.
Wolf sees him leaving.
Try and catch Mervyn.
Father, I forgot the tea.
By God, that has to be the worst cup of tea I've ever had.
Geo follows suit. Seeing him, really? Stoppard dons his hat.
Did you make it in a teapot? Or a plant pot?
Pardon me. Excuse me. Thank you. Sorry. Pardon me. Excuse me. Sorry.
From the balcony, Stalker watches as the inspector shuffles out of his row, then digs in his coat pockets.
Gloves.
He goes back to his seat.
Sorry. Excuse me. Pardon me. Excuse me. Terribly sorry. Bleeding gloves. I'm so sorry. There they are. Thank you. Sorry. Terribly sorry.
Having grabbed his gloves, Stoppard hurries out. Stalker sits back, wearing a pensive expression, then rises from her seat. Now, Mervyn exits the auditorium and heads to his right. Wolf comes out through another door and heads left. Geo strides down a different corridor. Stoppard takes the same doors as Mervyn, while Stalker hurries down a staircase, passing a door moments before Mervyn comes out and takes the stairs up. Four split-screen views show the four men on the stairs, each of them alone. Stalker hurries down a flight of steps, passing double doors through which Mervyn strides out. He heads upstairs just before Stoppard exits through a door marked private. On stage, the actress playing Mrs. Boyle adjusts a radio.
Interrupt book of bedtime to warn residents in the Colney Hatch area of London to be on the lookout for an escaped lunatic.
Lights go out on stage. As Stalker emerges in a corridor, the lights above her go out as well. A shadowy figure whistles. Mrs. Boyle frowns and steps across the stage. Outside, Mervyn runs into a hat-wearing figure.
You startled me.
You startled me!
The figure grabs Mervyn by the throat. On stage, Mrs. Boyle clutches her own throat. Mervyn struggles with his attacker. As Mrs. Boyle plays out her dramatic death scene, a split-screen view shows her and the flailing Mervyn side by side. On stage, the table is knocked over. Outside, Mervyn's assailant forces him to the floor, still choking him with black-gloved hands. A split-screen view shows Mervyn's feet and those of Mrs. Boyle twitching briefly before growing motionless. In character, Sheila walks onto the dark stage, while Stalker looks through an ornate grille to a lower level.
Turn the lights on!
The lights come on above Stalker, who sees Stoppard kneeling by Mervyn's corpse. On stage, Mrs. Boyle lies motionless. Outside, Stalker watches as the inspector disappears into the audience, flooding out of the auditorium. Emerging in a bustling hall, Stoppard moves briskly through the crowd of audience members. Stalker arrives and spots him across the room.
Stop! In the name of the law!
Stoppard takes the stairs. Bursting into a corridor, he hurries past crew members. Stalker gives chase. In the backstage area, Stoppard slips and crashes into a props table. He regains his balance and runs off. Stalker sprints past a passageway, then doubles back as she spots a figure in a hat and coat. She tackles him to the floor before realizing it's Dickie.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I thought you were somebody else.
No, that's all right.
And thank you for the tickets.
Yeah, very welcome.
She grabs a snow shovel as she hurries off. Meanwhile, Stoppard bursts through the stage doors into a back alley. Snow drifts through the night air. As the inspector looks up and down the alley, Stalker arrives behind him. She bonks him with the shovel. Now, Stoppard startles awake on a bed of snow. Bolting upright, he feels the back of his head. He walks slowly through a wooded area. Quick flashes show him moving between the snow-laden trees. Stoppard emerges in a clearing to find the theatre bar glowing brightly, out of place in the woodlands. Leo works behind the counter. Shaker in hand, he turns to face the inspector, who grins and takes a seat as Leo pours him a drink.
There you go.
Bottoms up.
Cheers.
Leo sips his drink. Stoppard finds his frozen solid.
What brings you to this neck of the woods?
A murder investigation.
Oh, yeah? Anyone I know?
You.
Leo slowly lowers his glass from his lips.
I'm sorry, I thought...
No, it's all right, it's all right.
Stoppard starts to leave.
Say, Inspector, tell me, was anyone, sad to see me go?
Stoppard shifts his gaze uneasily. Leo looks down. He picks up his glass.
Figures.
Stoppard continues on his way, emerging in another clearing where he finds a dressing room door in the snow. Dennis appears.
I'm sorry, sir. You can't go in there. You can only go in if you have a ticket.
I had a ticket. It was in my pocket. I could have sworn I had on a pair of trousers. I had trousers on.
He stands trouserless.
Where's my ticket? I'm sorry, sir. I can't let you in unless you have a ticket.
I had a ticket. I just don't have it on me.
Let me in!
Stop mucking about. I've got to go in.
Stoppard opens the door to find a figure stuffing Mervyn's corpse.
Oh, I know you.
The figure wears a hat and coat.
What are you doing?
Gio looks up from the body.
Sir. I've got a ticket.
Stoppard wakes on a jail bed with Stalker and the commissioner watching him.
What the hell is going on?
In his dress shirt and briefs, he sits up.
What am I doing here? Where are my trousers?
You asked me to press them, sir.
I did.
Yes, sir, you were adamant.
Stoppard looks around the holding cell.
How long have I been here?
18 hours.
Stoppard wraps his arms around himself as he moves to a chair.
My head is killing me. It's bloody freezing.
He sports a knee brace.
Did you make an arrest?
He gets dressed.
We did.
Who was it? Was it Gio?
Gio?
Yeah, Gio, the Italian chap, the killer, the man in the darkish overcoat, soft felt hat, and chased out of the theatre.
Inspector, that man was you.
What?
You are the man in the darkish overcoat and the soft felt hat that Constable Stalker here chased from the theatre.
I'm sorry, I'm not following. I think I might have a concussion.
Or the shakes?
Stoppard stares as he pulls on his trousers. Stalker lowers her gaze.
Well, this is ridiculous. What possible reason can I have for strangling a playwright? I haven't seen anything he's done.
No, but Mervyn saw the woman who visited Copernic at the Savoy.
So?
Inspector,
Have you spoken to Joyce lately?
Joyce?
Your wife?
Ex-wife.
Yes, I met her once at a police social. A plain girl. Very homely.
What does Joyce have to do with anything?
Her name was in Leo's little black book, sir.
Oh, come on. You don't seriously think that Leo...
Didn't your wife leave you for a yank?
Leo was an American GI.
Well, you listen to yourselves. You hear what you're saying?
Constable.
The commissioner looks to Stalker, who opens her notepad.
They do it out of revenge or rage because they have lost a loved one and can't forgive or forget. So they just stew and fester until it all comes out in a sudden frenzied act of violence.
Stoppard points a shoe at her.
You wrote that down.
She nods grimly.
That was a private conversation.
Well, I thought it could be important, sir.
Unbelievable.
She shifts uneasily.
We found her.
Who?
Joyce.
Joyce. Joyce is here.
Constable.
Stalker nods to an officer who unlocks a gate. A second officer opens a gate on the other side, and Stoppard gets to his feet, brushing his hair out of his face as the bespectacled woman from the Savoy enters the holding cell.
That's not my wife.
I'm sorry.
I said that's not my wife.
But it is your ex-wife.
Never seen that woman before in my life.
He sits back down.
What? Your name is Joyce?
It's a common name.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Stoppard dons his suit jacket.
Well, Inspector, in that case, I believe you're owed an apology.
Stoppard crosses his arms and stares at the Commissioner.
Constable.
Yes, sir, of course. I'm so sorry, sir. I just got the wrong end of the stick and I have no excuse. I jumped to conclusions again. I'm so sorry.
The inspector drapes his coat over one arm.
Commissioner, why don't you run along back to the office? Look over the quarterly accounts. Let me handle the murder investigation.
Inspector.
Heading out, Stoppard shoots a disappointed glance at the constable. Now, a bird's eye view looks down through a blizzard at an opening in a fence wall. As a car travels through the opening, words appear. Wallingford, Berkshire. Trundling up a snowy driveway with its headlights glaring, the car approaches a mansion. Another car follows a short distance behind the first. The two cars park in front of the mansion and their occupants get out.
It's Dickie and Sheila.
Hello, Wolf. Didn't expect to see you here.
Indoors, a grey-haired woman washes dishes at a sink. She studies some notes on the kitchen counter. As she glances back, a shadowy figure slips past her window. A man with a thin moustache answers the door to the new arrivals.
If you have broken down, there is a garage not 15 miles from here.
No, we're here for dinner.
I don't think so, sir.
This is Winterbrook House? The Christie residence?
It is.
We have an invitation.
We do, yes.
Dickie hands his over.
Richard Attenborough. Friends call me Dickie.
The printed invitation from Agatha Christie bears the author's signature at the bottom. The butler eyes the expectant guests.
I do hope you haven't travelled far.
He returns the invitation and goes to close the door.
Fellows! Who is it?
No one, sir. Tinkers.
What, in this unseasonable blizzard? Come on, man. Open sesame.
Richard Attenborough. Friends call me Dickie.
Max Mallowan, eminent archaeologist. Good God, man, you're frozen solid.
It's
come
cold,
on, come
it's
in.
Cold, yes.
Hello, Sheila Sim.
Hello.
John Wolfe.
How do you do?
Aunt Saville, we're friends of Petula. Spencer.
Oh, yes, I know it's you.
We thought we'd been invited for dinner.
Yes, we've received this. But apparently not from you.
Extraordinary. You know who's going to love this? It's Agatha. It's just like one of her confections. She's in the kitchen now trying to figure out some new ending. It helps to do the dishes, apparently.
Another car pulls up.
Oh, hello. Who else didn't we invite to dinner?
It's Petula.
Nice, so it is. Come in out of the cold, Chew. What on earth have you got there? It's not Mother, is it?
Pray so.
Oh, God. Better make that 8 for dinner, fellows, and that Agatha know.
Yes, sir.
And get a shovel to clear the path.
Yes, sir.
And do we have enough coal?
Yes, sir. 3 bags full, sir.
Hello, Maxie.
Hello, darling.
Oh, it's a full house. Yes.
Mother, come on in, straight through to the drawing room.
Yeah.
Now, I have a rather potent Mesopotamian aperitif that'll have you thawed out in a jiffy.
Outside, a figure skulks near the parked cars. Now, a horizontally divided split-screen view shows a police car and Stoppard sedan pulling up outside different buildings. Climbing out of his car, Stoppard strides up the front steps to Mervyn's apartment building. Inside the dark apartment, he turns on a flashlight. In the police car, Stalker sits with Joyce.
I'm sorry again that you had to find out like this.
Oh, I can't say it came as a surprise. Leo was a bad seed. Always in trouble he was.
The boy sits in the back.
He picked a fight the night he took us out.
Mervyn Cochranaris at the hotel.
No, the pictures.
No.
In the apartment, Stoppard combs through Mervyn's research files. He finds a news clipping with the headline, Tragic Death of a Boy in Foster Care.
He turned on this tall fella who came in after us and shouted, what are you following me for, buddy? And, did he know a good dentist because he was about to lose a lot of teeth?
Stalker nods thoughtfully.
Right, who's ready for a top-up?
Oh, no.
No. Where is the old girl? Not going to play the recluse card, is she?
Oh, no. She'll be down soon enough.
They all look up.
That'll be Fellows. The man's an oaf.
Fellows steps into the room carrying a metal bucket.
A tall fella, you say?
Had a funny accent.
Stalker wears a pensive look.
Italian?
No, not that funny. More like a village idiot.
Side-by-side views show the constable staring off while Stoppard frowns at a photo.
I'm sorry, but you have to get out.
Gio enters the apartment.
Oh, no. Good heavens, no.
Stoppard shows his ID.
Please, I telefono, por favor.
Telefono?
Yes, si.
Estalla.
Gracias.
At the bullpen.
Scotland Yard, Sergeant Bagwell speaking.
Yes, Stoppard here.
Stalker bangs on a door marked 24. A neighbour steps out.
Please, stand back!
He keeps the key!
Under the mat.
Having charged through the door, Stalker rises to her feet.
Let me guess, Inspector. You're after an address.
How did you know that?
Constable Stalker, sir. She called just now for the same information.
Stalker?
In the dreary residence she just burst into, Stalker steps up to a desk and finds the dinner invitation. At Winterbrook House...
Agatha?
Gosh, is she all right?
Max, Fellows and the 6 dinner guests hurry out of the drawing room. They're back into the room with their hands raised. The barrel of a rifle follows them, held in black gloved hands. In the dreary residence, Stalker stares at an usher's uniform jacket draped over the desk chair. At Winterbrook House, clad in a dark overcoat and felt hat, Dennis aims his rifle at the dinner party.
Where's Agatha? What have you done with her?
Now, Stoppard's sedan pulls up outside Dennis's residence. Stalker runs out with the invitation as he gets out of his car.
It was the usher, sir.
I know.
He was under our noses all this time.
Is he in?
No, sir, but I found this. Can we get going now, sir?
I can take it from here, Constable.
Oh, right. And me, sir?
Go back to the station.
Yes, sir.
Owen, Constable.
Yes, sir.
Make a start on the paperwork.
Stoppard gets back in his car.
Yes, sir.
Wearing a disappointed expression, Stalker watches him drive off. At Winterbrook House, Dennis backs into the drawing room, dragging a person rolled up in a rug. He points his weapon at the guests.
Is it me, or does he look awfully familiar?
It's Dennis. He's an usher from the Ambassador's.
Oh, Dennis! So nice to see you. This is a strange coincidence. What are you doing here?
Well, I invited you.
Oh, my God. You killed Leo and Mervyn.
I did. I wanted to stop the film and the play.
What film? What play?
The Mousetrap!
Now, look here, Dennis. We all have strong opinions on the theatre. I mean, in a sense, that's what it's there for, to provoke emotion. And I appreciate you don't care for the Mousetrap. I'll be the first to admit it's not exactly Hamlet. But you must see that...
Well, this is a bit of an overreaction.
That's not what this is.
Then what is this?
It's not your story to tell, is it? It's mine.
Oh, I might have known. A disgruntled writer. Don't tell me you had the idea first.
No. It happened to me.
I'm sorry, I am completely lost. I don't have a theatrical background.
You're not Dennis Corrigan, are you?
Petula's mother stares. Dennis nods.
Oh, you poor boy.
How do you mean?
He lost his brother in real life. Dreadful business it was. It was years ago now. I told you about it. It was the case the Mousetrap was based on.
Inspired by Mother, loosely.
But you're an usher. You had to watch that play night after night. It must have been torture.
A photo shows two boys.
If we would help. He was only 6 when he died, my brother.
The Mousetrap is actually based on a real-life case.
Neglected and left for dead by the people who were supposed to look after us. It sold a lot of newspapers, but no one cared about us.
People flock to the theatre.
I thought the play would be different. A famous writer was going to tell our story.
Two brothers have put their faith in the British social services.
But when I saw what Agatha Christie had done, used our pain and suffering as a motive for a deranged killer, my brother's death reduced to a cheap sideshow.
There's been a murder.
I knew he wouldn't be able to rest in peace until the play ended. But it didn't. It just went on and on and on.
The Mousetrap is 100, not out.
When I heard about the film adaptation, I just snapped.
Without me, there is no movie. You understand? You got a problem, buddy?
I killed the director to stop the film. And thought a corpse on the stage would put an end to the play. But they didn't even close the theatre.
Do you think you might be finished in time for curtain up tomorrow night?
And Mervyn's new ideas for the film made me sick to my stomach.
I'll take the bare bones of the story, a rather mundane tale of child abuse, and make it my own.
He left me no choice.
You startled me.
I had to kill him too.
Dennis strangles the writer.
I thought that would be the end of it. But you all just carried on like nothing had happened. Shame on you. Well, maybe you'll take notice if I kill Agatha Christie herself.
The person in the rug flails.
Well, I think she's trying to say something.
Oh, for God's sake, let her out. I'll stop the film.
And the play. This is barbaric.
Fine.
Dennis kicks the rug and the guests back away as it unfurls. Wolf's wife gets to her feet.
Dana? Darling, what are you doing here?
I followed you. I suppose I was going to make a scene. Hello, Anne. Then this beanpole assaulted me and I woke up in a carpet.
If you're not Agatha Christie, where the hell is she?
Good God, man, you mean you don't know? What kind of a bumbling, half-footed psychopath are you?
Will you be quiet? Please, let me think.
Yes, of course, of course. Mm. Why don't you come in and sit down? Dennis, have a little moment to yourself.
Agatha peeks through the double doors and sees Dennis moving to the sofa. Meanwhile, Stoppard's sedan hurtles down a snowy road, the windshield wipers working furiously and the headlights barely illuminating the path ahead. He speeds past 2 trees in the desolate landscape. The police car follows. A full moon hangs in the sky, illuminating Stalker's determined face as she drives through the blizzard. She presses down on the accelerator, her alert eyes fixed on the path ahead. At Winterbrook House, a view from inside a cabinet shows Agatha opening the doors. Reaching in, she pulls out a bottle of rodenticide with a skull and crossbones symbol on the label. In the drawing room, snow falls outside the windows as Dennis sits hunched on the sofa with the guests lined up on either side, watching him tensely. Standing with Petula and Wolf, Fellows sees Max staring at him from the other side. The butler acknowledges his master, then frowns as Max cocks his head towards the sofa. Fellows raises his eyebrows. Slowly and deliberately, Max once again tilts his head, and Fellows notices the rifle resting against the sofa. As Petula watches, Fellows shakes his head at Max, who frowns and nods urgently. He narrows his eyes at the butler. Nudged by Petula, Fellows reluctantly inches towards the rifle. Sheila notices him.
I for one believe that Dennis here is owed an apology.
Yes.
He's right.
She sits beside him.
The truth is the truth. It is not to be manipulated or played with, and certainly not for entertainment.
No.
Art is supposed to reveal the truth, pervert it. I mean, how would Agatha Christie like it if someone took one of her stories and twisted it and corrupted it just for the hell of it?
Fellows reaches for the rifle.
I think that we should all feel thoroughly ashamed of ourselves.
Well, here we are. Tea for everyone.
Dennis grabs the rifle.
Sorry to have kept you. Oh, no, please don't get up. Not on my account.
As she sets the tray down, Petula's mother sets it swiveling.
It's fine, just as it was. I think it was that way.
It is so nice to see you again, Agatha. And
Dickie reaches for a cup.
No, not that one. No, that's for Dennis.
Agatha picks up two of the eight cups.
It's Dennis, isn't it?
She hands him one.
There we are. I put an extra lump in.
Thank you.
Everyone else helps themselves.
She sits beside the usher.
Now, Dennis, how can I help? Why don't we sit here and drink our tea and discuss the matter like civilized people?
She sips her tea.
I want you to stop the mousetrap.
Oh, I am sorry, but that I cannot do. No. I'm afraid it goes against everything I hold dear in life. Yes, I'm a writer, you see. I can't be told what to write or what not to write. It would be a denial of one's freedom. Do you see, Dennis? Do drink up.
Meanwhile, Stalker squints behind the wheel of her car as she drives through the blizzard. At the mansion, Stoppard approaches the drawing room window with his pistol. Inside, wearing a doleful expression, Dennis lifts his teacup to his mouth and takes a small sip. As Agatha flashes a satisfied smile, Fellows keels over.
Oh, good God, Fellows!
Dennis grabs his weapon.
Now look here, young man!
Dennis strikes Max with the butt of the rifle. Stoppard runs past the window. As Sheila points, Dennis whips around and fires at the window. On the road, Stalker gets a flat tire. Struggling to control the car, she veers towards a cross erected between two diverging roads. She crashes into it. At the mansion, Stoppard elbows a glass pane in a back door. Once inside, he flicks a switch on a fuse box. The lights go out.
Now what's happened?
Gripping his gun with a gloved hand, Stoppard moves through the dark. He cautiously pushes a door open and peeks in, then tiptoes into the mansion's foyer. Dennis holds Agatha hostage.
Dennis.
Stoppard points his gun.
Put the popular author down, please, Dennis.
No!
In the drawing room, Sheila moves to the drinks cabinet and opens a bottle.
Sheila, darling, now's hardly the time.
Dickie, I need a light.
But you don't smoke.
She shows the bottle with newspaper stuffed down its neck. Split-screen views show a lighter being flicked on and the Molotov cocktail being lit before the flaming weapon flies through the foyer. It sets a display cabinet on fire. As Dennis shields his face, Agatha escapes and Stoppard shoots the usher. Having run out of bullets, Stoppard eyes his gun as Dennis sits up, wincing. In slow motion, Stalker runs towards the foyer. As Dennis aims his rifle at Stoppard, Stalker bursts through the doorway and tackles the inspector.
Look out!
Dennis reloads the rifle.
Dennis, don't do it, please!
Agatha bonks the usher with the snow shovel, then raises the sharp edge. Max takes the weapon.
It's all right. He's dead.
It's over.
Stalker eyes blood on her hand.
Sir.
I'm bleeding.
Stoppard scoots close and holds her gently.
Hang in there, Constable.
Sergeant's exam's in a month.
It's funny, sir. Actually, I don't feel anything. I think it might have just been a nick.
Yeah. Just the nick of time, I'd say.
Very good.
I'm sorry, Constable. I haven't been altogether honest or open or loyal or fair to you as a partner. Truth be told, I haven't been a partner at all, you know.
Sir, you don't have to say that.
No, I want you to know I do trust you.
Thank you, sir. That does mean a lot. But when I say that I can't feel anything, I think what I mean is that I don't think the bullet hit me, sir.
What do you mean?
Did you,
She spots a wound on his arm.
Oh, no. I see.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you're right again, Constable.
Are you all right, sir?
I think you better call an ambulance.
Yep.
Stalker hurries off.
Yes, that appears very good.
Wolf and Petula peer out.
Shoot out in a big explosion. Perhaps it's for the best that Mervyn wasn't alive to see it.
Quite.
As they step out into the foyer, a view slowly rotates around the drawing room, taking in the various dinner guests in the aftermath of the shootout. With her hands on her hips, Sheila gazes towards the flames while Anne trades a tense look with Adana. Petula's mother drinks her tea. Fellows lies dead on the sofa, his corpse positioned upright like in Leo's storyboard sketch. Words appear on either side of his head. The end. Hidden behind the sofa, Dickie scrambles to his feet.
It's okay, everyone. I'm fine.
As he steps away, the view fades to black.
Now that's what I call a Leo Kopernik ending. But before we go our separate ways, you'll be wanting to know what became of the heroes of this tale.
In uniform, Stalker takes an exam.
Constable Stalker, as advertised, sat her sergeant's exams in the spring of 1953.
She finishes before her male peers.
She aced them.
She smiles to herself. At an awards ceremony, Stoppard wears a sling.
Inspector Stoppard was awarded the King's Police and Fire Services Medal. Harold Scott received a knighthood.
Shaking the inspector's hand, Commissioner Scott poses for photos.
The play, if you can believe it, is still going strong in London's West End. Over 10 million people have sat through The Mousetrap.
As Dickie performs on stage, Stoppard and Stalker watch, sitting side by side in the audience. The inspector turns in his seat to face us.
Well, now that you've seen our film, you are an accomplice to murder. And so we ask you to remember that it is very much in your interest not to tell a soul outside of this...
Sorry, but I've missed the ending once. I don't want to miss it again.
No, of course not. I'm sorry.
As Stalker faces the front, Stoppard raises his eyebrows at us and puts a finger to his lips. He turns back to the play. Cut to black. Intersection of two roving spotlights, the title appears. See how they run. This film has been described by Deluxe with funding by Searchlight Pictures, voiced by Christian Simpson.